Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the March 19th meeting of the Education Finance Division to order. My apologies for the delay. The previous committee, something about rules, I'm told, rules maybe, went a little overtime, and it's taken us a few minutes to settle. Mr. Koppel, thank you for being here today and handling the committee legislative assistant responsibilities. We do have a number of bills. We've asked testifiers to try to hold their testimony to 2 minutes. We want to make sure that everyone, not only who's contacted Ms. Burt previously, gets to testify, but also, of course, if there's members of the public who wish to testify either for or against any of the bills that are coming before us today. With that, Representative Murphy, taking it from the top here today. Representative Murphy, would you like to move that House File 194 be before the committee and laid over for possible inclusion in a future division report?
Mr. Chair, I would like to make that motion without the word possible.
you have an amendment to your bill, or do you want to amend the motion? You get one or the other, not both.
I have an amendment to the bill.
All right. Representative Murphy, you're moving the A1 amendment to be before the committee?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. This is an author's amendment to get the bill in the order that she prefers. Any discussion to the amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor of the adoption of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. No. Motion prevails. Representative Murphy, your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your cooperation on that. I'm before you today, perhaps most unprepared that I've been in many a year to go into details, but some of the information came in later than I anticipated in my preparation calendar. But House File 194 is a possible solution, to make things better for school budgets and addressing the problems that come with present laws on special education and paying for special education. We still have the major problem that the government, the United States government, Department of Education, has never fully funded their share of special education. But we haven't been able to do very much with that. And so we've been working for a couple years on trying to find some better solutions for paying for special education in our public and charter schools in the state of Minnesota. And I had several proposals. I had a $700 million proposal, and I had what I thought was about a $400 million proposal and one lesser. And we picked House File 194 with consultation with Mr. Chair. And I think that this is a concerted effort to address the issue that will make the students across the state have a better education, and the school boards across the state more money in which to have a fair and more equitable education for all children in the state of Minnesota. House File 194 is a comprehensive bill that increases special education, reduces the bill backs, and increases charter school aid. It increases special education funding by approximately $361 million, but we have an updated fiscal note that we will review in a few minutes. And it increases special education excess cost aid, and it removes the cap, the growth cap. We reduce the amount of unreimbursed special education costs that charter schools can bill back to the local school district from 90% to 50%. And the increased state aid to charter schools is equivalent to $420 per pupil that school districts are allowed to levy overall funding for special education. And this increased aid for charter schools totals approximately $127 million per year. The calculations are simplified. We remove the pupil, as I said before, we remove the per pupil cap on special education aid, and we increase special education aid by removing the maximum minimum aid limitation and increases the aid from 56 to 62% of the defined costs. We also eliminate the old formula, and we increases and the 50% still brings in more money than what we had before. Now, we have a run, and Mr. Straub can go over that, and I would like Ms. Emily. I would like Emily to go over the fiscal note.
Ms. Adrians, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My apologies. I don't think any of you have the fiscal note. It was just completed this morning. So you will get a copy of it. I'll just quickly mention the front page costs for the bill. The program start or the changes begin in fiscal year 2021. So that's the first year of costs. And in that first year, it's about $481 million. And then the biennium of 2022 and 2023, the total cost in that biennium is just over $1 billion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Adrians. Mr. Strom, is there a run?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I've made a mix-up this morning and sent things the wrong places. If Matt or one of the pages would run to duplicating, there should be copies there in just a moment.
Thank you. All right. Representative Murphy, would it make sense to bring up Ms. Rourke at this time?
Yes.
All right. Ms. Rourke. And members, you should think of the bills that we're doing today as kind of a menu of options. It's certainly not E, all of the above. It may be A or C or a little bit of B and some of E, and you know that will be determined through the committee process. But this is a menu of options on the response to the underfunding of special education at this time. Ms. Rourke, welcome to the committee. Thank you for coming down. If you would please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony, please.
Cindy Rourke. Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Cindy Rourke. I'm a special education teacher at Ordine East Middle School in Duluth. This is my 22nd year teaching in the district, and all my years have been in special education by choice. I also have a license to teach general ed 1 through 6, and I also teach driver education and behind the wheel at East High School in Duluth. At Ordine, I'm one of 6.5 special education teachers. My classroom is a self-contained program with students that have severe and profound cognitive disabilities and or autism, as well as physical disabilities. My students are so amazing, and I'd like to share with you a few of their very unique needs. Two students are fed using a feeding tube. Three students are in a wheelchair and require orthotics to be put on during the day to assist with stretching their muscles and supporting their weak ankles. They are transferred to adaptive equipment to help them stand for periods of time during the day to help their bone density so their bones don't become too brittle and break. Those same three students require two adults to assist them with bathroom duties at least twice a day, often not when they are scheduled. There are also students that don't have the physical needs but need supervision and assistance with small groups or individual functional academics such as learning community signs to keep them safe in the community as well as learning their address in case they were ever lost. We work on social skills so they can introduce themselves to someone new that they meet as well as initiate conversation with peers. A couple of the students use alternate communication devices to communicate. Another student uses an eye gaze system to help her communicate her needs. I also have a couple students that are verbal and able to communicate on their own. All of my students do rely on adults for all activities of daily living, both in and out of school. If an adult were not available, they are not able to have even their basic needs met. My student schedule includes one class period each day within the general education class, as well as recess and lunch with their peers. While all this is meaningful and amazing for the general ed students and my students to experience, the reality is we typically miss going to general ed classes at least 3 times per week due to lack of paraprofessional support to transport the students to the classroom. My students don't get outside for recess for the same reason, and we are only able to transport the students to the cafeteria maybe once per week. Their ability to integrate with general ed is extremely limited due to lack of paraprofessional support on a daily basis. I'm only able to make it happen if I have a student absent or if I have a college student volunteering in my classroom. Without that, we don't have the staff to meet the general ed needs that are guided by law and, more importantly, what my students deserve. They deserve to have a teacher available to teach them on a daily basis, as well as support from paraprofessionals that are hired to support their needs, both physically and educationally. I have many years of experience and a solid resume of success as a special education teacher, but I need the support staff to help me so I can offer a program that is able to accomplish the goals and objectives of their IEP. As I said earlier, I chose this profession and I love my kids and my job. I'm here today in support of this bill to help address the special education funding needs so that I and many of my colleagues can continue in this profession and provide these students the support and services they need and deserve. Thank you, Representative Murphy, for offering this bill, and thank you, Chair and committee members, for this opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you, Ms. Rourke. Representative Murphy, do you have any other testifiers?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either before or against House File 194? Good morning, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Casper Hill. I'm a St. Paul resident. Learning about my daughter was a bit like peeling an onion. There was one layer after another. The first discovery was ADHD. Taking care of that exposed sensory issues, sense, and just about noises, just about anything else that in her environment that could shut her down, it became too intense. After that, it was an autism diagnosis. It's high-functioning autism, which is why it wasn't spotted early on. Then, just last summer, she revealed to her mom and me that she's trans. I know that's not a learning disability, but just understand we've had a lot to adjust to. She's now a junior at Venture Academy in Minneapolis. It's a charter school that, among other things, has figured out how to get her learning. Every student's pathway is personalized, so teachers have been able to help her find her own sources of motivation. It wasn't an easy process. As we peeled back her layers when she was younger, we tried to get her conventional schools to adjust her experience there. One school suggested she had a serious personality disorder. A later one provided special ed services, but it amounted to having her leave class when it became challenging and go to a quiet room to play board games. They set a low bar for her, and it cast doubt on her goals of ever going to college. Her test scores were higher than most of her classmates, but she was never considered for advanced classes or pushed to work to her abilities. Those schools equated her differences to deficits and considered them her inability to learn, which they saw as her problem. Her IEPs, her learning plans, were about finding ways to make her adjust to the inflexible school environment. She was bored and frustrated and internalized the low opinions coming from her teachers. She was bullied relentlessly. We complained numerous times about her school's indifference to her torment to little avail. One day she said she'd rather die than go back to school. We had many meetings about it all, but ultimately it was the district that suggested we consider alternative placement. We took a chance by moving her to Venture, and that chance paid off. It was apparent at the first IEP meeting there that the school saw her difficulty learning to be their challenge, not hers. As we peeled back my daughter's many layers, they saw opportunities to change her environment and give her the tools needed to learn. She responded right away, conquering 2 years of math in a matter of weeks. Schools like Venture seek to find ways to teach kids the other schools deemed unteachable. This year, my daughter has A's and B's, including two classes she took at Minneapolis College. Mind you, just 4 years earlier, her traditional school special ed teacher casted doubts whether she'd even be able to handle college work. I have nothing against traditional schools. I'm a product of them, and I've done fine. My oldest child went to Southwest High and graduated with an IB diploma. Those schools do a great job educating most kids, but they're not batting 1,000. My daughter was one of the times they struck out at the plate. Had there been no charter school option, she would be struggling and college would be less likely. Instead, she's now making a list of her reach schools and visiting campuses. My daughter is one of a handful of middle-class students at Venture. 96% of her classmates are low-income children of color. One-fourth have disabilities. The school is located behind a Papa John's and an abandoned print shop. None of the families enrolled their children there seeking Cadillac services. Most of them don't even know their children's most basic rights. They just know their child was being left behind. They want what I want, a fair shot at a bright future we all dream for our kids. The bill being considered in the legislature will reduce what funding charter schools get for their students, which is already far less than traditional schools get, making their job even more difficult, if not impossible. At the same time, it would reward traditional schools for doing the bare minimum for its special ed students. Please do not approve this proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, ma'am. That's me talking.
Sorry.
That's okay. That's all right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Erin Wannett. I'm the executive director at Indigo Education. In addition, I've been a director of special education for 11 years, and prior to becoming an administrator, I was a special education teacher for students with emotional and behavior disorders. Indigo Education is a nonprofit serving public schools statewide. At this point in time, the entirety of our client base are charter schools. Venture Academy is a client of Indigo Education. Of the 163 charter schools that exist today, we serve 65 of those schools. Although 163 schools may sound like a lot of schools, the community at large really serves 6% of students with disabilities in Minnesota and is responsible for 7% of the costs. During our 20 years of service, we have helped the schools to initiate, maintain, and evolve their special education programs. Indigo Education provides guidance and oversight to schools regarding special education finance, dispute resolution, and student-centered programming. Charter schools as a business model are consumer-driven nonprofits. As public schools, charter schools have the same responsibilities as traditional public schools, although access to our funding differs. In short, our programs in charter schools evolve from day to day, depending on enrollment. To reiterate, charter schools must abide by the same state and federal guidelines in terms of the execution of IDEA, and our agency exists to ensure that that occurs. I think we all in this room can agree that students' needs are growing in their complexity. And as public schools, we have a combined responsibility to address those needs and respond with intentional and student-centered programming. Unfortunately, it seems like there are limits on our financial and human resources at this time. I'm present today to ask you to pause on the forward movement of House File 194. Rather than moving forward with this file, I'd like to propose that stakeholders within the public school sector, intermediates, cooperatives, and charters, and traditional districts gather together to create a formula based on a shared understanding of one another's business model, process for program development and implementation, and the long-term impact thereof. Let's gather together based on our affection for students rather than a competition for resources. I'm hopeful that a byproduct of this work group will be an increased level of cooperation between public schools, which is also most fiscally responsible. I wholeheartedly believe in educators in Minnesota and the administrators in our public schools, and I believe that we can create a reasonable funding solution for public schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Wannett?
Wannett,
can you just explain, I'm not clear what services Indigo Education provides.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, our organization provides Director of Special Education supports. And so if you can imagine that we have about 10 Directors of Special Education employed at Indigo Education, and each district in Minnesota is required to have a Director of Special Education to oversee the program. And so rather than having a full-time Director of Special Education assigned to each charter school, our Directors of Special Education have a caseload of schools, like a special education teacher would have a caseload of children that he or she serves. And so our services are itinerant in terms of visiting and communicating with schools on a regular basis to have program oversight.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Members, you've received both the fiscal note for House File 194 and a run based on House File 194. Ms. Adrians, do you have anything to add now that we've got the fiscal note in front of us?
No, Mr. Chair, I think if you want Mr. Strom to go through the run, that might be more
okay.
Appropriate.
Thank you very much. Mr. Strom, if you could, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy and committee members, my apologies for the paperwork mix-up that I made this morning. You've got a run now that was just handed out that's oriented landscape on the page in front of you. It's a district-by-district printout, and what the printout attempts to do is simplify the columns to try and show the current amounts of cross-subsidy, the additional amount of aid that would go out under the special education formula under Representative Murphy's bill. Pardon me. And then lastly, to show the additional aid that Representative Murphy included in her bill for charter schools as a mechanism to essentially keep the funding systems relatively balanced. And let me back up for just a moment here. Under our, there's some information in the summary about this as well. But under our current model, special education revenue is essentially a cost-based formula where a percentage of each district is funded through a series of formulas. The cost is not sufficient to cover the full amount of special education. The difference between the cost and the expenditures is what this committee refers to as the cross-subsidy. And if you look in the fourth to the last column, the one that's labeled current, cross-subsidy revenue per ADM, you can see per ADM, you can see the amount that each district essentially has unfunded of its special education costs. So in that fourth to last column, if you just look at the top of the printout, statewide, $1,056 is the cross-subsidy that's unfunded by the state and federal special education formulas. The next six rows list the various groupings of school districts, and you can see the cross-subsidy for each of those types of groups of school districts. And then starting on about a third of the way down the page is the district-by-district run. For those unfunded costs, if a student is open enrolled or is a charter school student, the serving school district bills back to the resident district 90% of the unreimbursed costs. and This is essentially an amount then that goes back to the district of residence. So Representative Murphy's bill really does three things. It increases the special education aid, and that's shown in the third from the third from the beginning of the printout column. The change is what's in the black box there. You can see $361 million of additional special education aid will go out under Representative Murphy's proposal. And you can see how those are divided per group. And you can see that on the charter school line, which we'll focus on here, there's a loss to charter schools because the second change for this part of the system, because even though they're picking up a substantial amount of additional special education revenue, they're losing the ability to bill back to the school district, to the resident school district, 40% of those unreimbursed costs. The charter schools would still bill back 50% instead of 90% of the costs. So a couple of points to look at here. If you go just through the special ed change alone, you can see in the fifth to last column that the total statewide, the average district is $412 better off. You can go through the categories of schools there, and then you can see that through this point in time in Representative Murphy's bill, charter schools are on average $390 worse off because of the lack of the ability to bill that other 40% back to the resident school districts. However, the last two columns show what happens in the first part of Representative Murphy's bill, where she increases the aid to charter schools. And you can see there in the second to last column that charter schools on average would be picking up an extra roughly $2,000 per student because of the two new aids, the local optional revenue and the district's referendum amount where the charter is located, specified as state aid for that district. So it won't affect the amount of the question that the taxpayers ask on a referendum, but that amount will be paid to the charter school. So the average charter school picks up $2,000 in aid under that provision. And then the very last column is the net increase in aid for charter schools after the special education changes have been made and after the general education changes have been made. And you can see that the average charter school is quite a bit better off when all of the changes are said and done. So let me focus just for, and I'm sorry to take so long, it's a complicated printout, and I just want members to be able to focus on the right sets of columns. So if you go to the third and fourth last columns for a school district, you can see, just use Aiken as an example, they were having a $916 cross subsidy prior to the change that Representative Murphy's bill proposes. After the change, that cross subsidy would fall to $376 per pupil. So that's the amount that the Aiken School District would then need to take out of pocket, out of its general fund, to pay for unfunded special education costs. The Minneapolis School District is the next one down. You can see they have a very large cross subsidy. Currently, they have to take $1,854 per pupil out of their general fund to pay for their unfunded special education costs. This proposal would reduce that by about $700 so that they'd be at the $1,188 level of unfunded cross subsidy. And where you can see these various amounts are in the aid account amount at the beginning, and then through the proposed changes, you can see how those changes help in each of those categories. So in this bill back arrangement, the category in the aid column labeled net tuition, which is the sixth to last category, you can see in Minneapolis that they're picking up essentially an extra $485 of benefit from the way the tuition changes are done, and their total benefit is the $654 per pupil. So on the special education side. If we just take a sample charter schools are listed in the 4,000s. So if you turn to page 9 of the printout and go to a relatively high cost bill back on the charter school. If you go to the page 9 of the printout, the third to bottom line is the Cedar Riverside Community Charter School. You can see under that net tuition number right now that essentially the charter school is going to be worse off by $1,925 because they're no longer able to bill back 90%. They're only able to bill back 50%. So when added to the added special education aid, in that total special ed aid column, the fifth to last, they're $1,302 worse off with the special ed change alone. But then if you go across to the new money in general education for charter schools, you can see that they pick up $2,909 through the addition of local optional revenue and state aid equal to the amount of the Minneapolis referendum. So the net result for a district like Cedar Riverside is an increase in funds, not a decrease in funds. That's $1,607 is the net result there. So in summary, Mr. Chair, and I'd be happy to answer specific questions, but in summary, what Representative Murphy's bill is doing is, and you can see this in the fiscal note on a statewide basis, is increasing special education funding by about $360 million, lowering the amount that districts and charter schools can bill each other for the unreimbursed costs, and then for charter schools providing additional sources of general education revenue to them. And the net of that really is the number that one needs to look at under House File 194. So with that, Mr. Chair, I apologize for the lengthy explanation.
Oh, Mr. Trump, no apology needed. It's a complicated bill with several moving parts. Is there questions from members? Let's start with to Mr. Strom and the runs. Mr. Representative Hewitt and then Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Strom, just a real quick question. Is this per pupil based on the total pupils or just the ones in special ed?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hewitt, the pupils amounts are shown on total pupils using the column called average daily membership. And that column shows up almost in the middle of this printout, right under the T in tuition rate at the header. Average daily membership is the unweighted count of students served at each site. So if we go to your school district, which is 196 on the second page there, you can see in that column that your district has 29,049 pupils in average daily membership. And so that's what all of the per pupil and numbers from there to the right are based on, is that count of students. So the change in regular special ed aid for the Rosemont District, District 196, is a $478 increase. The decrease in the excess cost aid because there's more regular aid is $67. For a couple of reasons, the tuition doesn't change much for the Apple Valley Rosemont School District. So the net change, the fifth to last column, is that the district's picking up an additional $412 per student, not per special ed student, but per all students in the district in special education funding. And their cross subsidy then, the amount that they have to pay out of their other budget, would drop from $1,030 to $628 per pupil. So they're just that $412 better off, essentially, on the cross subsidy. That's all additional money per total student. And you can see that total amount back right by the really dark line. If you go back across, lost my place here, to the third column, you can see that total change in special education aid for the Rosemont District under this bill would be an increase in special education funding of $11.95 million.
Thank you for your time.
A reminder to members, this is only the first of several bills this morning. Representative Sandell.
Just a quick note. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to endorse Ms. Wanick's suggestion that charter schools and the traditional schools get together to talk about the work that may improve the situation for special ed students. That's the intention of the idea of charter schools in the first place, to serve as a experiment and bring back their findings and activities to the traditional schools. Second of all, where does the additional funding come from? The fiscal note suggests that it might come from additional referendum. Is that right? Either Representative Murphy or no, that's not right.
Representative Sandell, I believe the additional funding comes from the Speaker's office.
The target.
Deep pockets.
Thank Representative you, Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just quick, so I make sure that I hear this right, because currently charter schools are not able to tap into the levy referendum. this would allow them to do that.
Madam Chair, Mr. Strom, can you clarify that for me, please?
Madam Chair, Representative Youakim, right now that's correct. Charter schools get neither location, local optional revenue or the referendum revenue. This provision in Representative Murphy's bill would give them both of those sources of revenue, but all as state aid. So it would leave the question that was asked by the local school district unaffected, and it would leave the property tax unaffected in the local school district. Instead, it would be an additional state aid of that amount paid to the charter school based on the geographic location of the charter school.
Representative Youakim?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's nice to know that the money wouldn't be coming off the – it would – basically, you're holding the levy harmless at the local level. My concern with the way you would measure that or how you would do that, we have school districts that have some districts that have a really hard time passing a levy, and then some districts whose voters are very generous at passing their levies. So I would be worried about seeing this great influx or shift of charter schools into the districts where, wow, we know that they pass levies really well, and we're looking to relocate. So just a little bit of a concern.
All right. Thank you. Representative, any other questions from committee members? Representative Richardson? I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Strom, I was wondering if you could talk just a little bit about the Metro Deaf School allocation under 4005, because that seems like a much higher number than other charter schools would be looking at.
Mr. Strong.
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, if members turn to page 9 of their printout, the Metro Deaf School is the second to bottom line. I should have mentioned that there are a few charter schools that, instead of under current law billing back 90% of their unreimbursed costs, bill back 100% of their unreimbursed costs. And those are charter schools where more than 70% of the population is students with a disability. And Representative Murphy's bill, House File 194, does not affect the bill back for those students. So as you read across the line there, essentially what's happening is, even though that net tuition is going down, the total special ed number in the fifth to last column, you can see there's essentially zero change for them there. And the increase in general education aid then goes to that district. Now there's some with a few of the charter schools, there's also a general education bill back to the resident district as well. And so this essentially, I think, would be an entire wash for the school such as Metro Deaf, because even though you're seeing an increase of $1,567 in the general ed column, because they bill back their unreimbursed general ed spending as well, that would be an offset to the amount that's getting billed back in the general ed category. So Representative Murphy's bill shouldn't have any effect on the four charter schools that have more than 70% students with a disability in their enrollment.
Thank you.
Representative Richardson, anything more?
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Murphy, any closing comments on House File 194?
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion.
So Representative Murphy renews her motion that House File 194, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future division report. Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Thank
Representative
you.
Wolgmont, please. Representative Wolgmont, welcome to the committee. Representative Edelson, would you like to move that House File 1162 be before the committee for possible inclusion in a future division report?
So moved, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Representative Wolgamott, welcome to the committee. Please proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Edelson, and thank you, committee members. I'm Dan Wolgamott, representative from District 14B in St. Cloud, and I'm here today to present House File 1162, which is a ramp-up of aid to school districts for their special education cross-subsidies. Many of you are familiar with the term unfunded mandate, and most of you are now familiar with the term cross-subsidy. Cross-subsidization often means a situation in which profits or income from one activity are used to pay for another activity that is losing money or costing more. For decades now, Minnesota has had a special education deficit, which the Minnesota Department of Education and others often call the special education cross-subsidy. We call it a cross-subsidy because both state and federal law basically prohibit a district from cutting expenditures to resolve the unfunded mandate, but instead require districts to take funds from other necessary programs to cover the mandate. As the current funding formula sits right now, a formula that does not recognize the actual cost of special education, the district that I represent, District 742, has to shift $12 million from its overall fund to cover those costs to meet the mandate. Members, Mr. Chair, unless the state is willing to confront the true cost of educating Minnesota's most fragile students, the unmet need will swamp public education in the district that I represent and districts all throughout the state. My bill only begins to recognize those costs, and I would dare say it's a modest approach to the fact that this issue is actually much larger than the fiscal note attached to the bill. Members, to explain in better detail the crisis that our school districts are facing, I have some testifiers. And with that, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would like to invite up Jerry Swanson, who is a special education speech pathologist at Clearview Elementary School from District 742.
Very good. And perhaps, Representative Wolgamont, I have three other testifiers, Mr. Dahlgren, Pat Devine, and Lori Posh. If they could come down, or at least one or two, kind of play that on-deck thing to smooth transitions between testifiers, that would be appreciated. They could all sit behind you in the, I don't know what we call that space.
The bullpen,
of course. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. That's going to stick. Ms. Swanson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Jerry Swanson. Good morning, Chairman and committee members. My name is Jerry Swanson, and I have been a special educator for 30 years. I served primarily as a role as a speech pathologist, but also a teacher of the deaf, a special education teacher with a variety of students with autism and other disabilities. Let me say first and foremost, I love my job. I came into this career to give voice, quite literally, to those who could not speak or use an alternative mode of communication. I sign fluently and have a passion as well for students who have severe autism. I have watched students gain so many skills and access so much more than I did when I first started my career 30 years ago. I have worked with students with higher IQs than any of you in this room. But who wouldn't have been able to survive on a job if we wouldn't have taught them to interact with other kids or adults, and we did, and they soared. Kids who were considered cognitively delayed years ago because they were nonverbal, we know today that giving them the proper mode of communication, that they can function at the same level as their peers. Imagine a world without access like this, missing out on the great minds such as Stephen Hawking. I started out working when caseloads were manageable and funding was adequate, but in the past few years, as the needs and complexities of our jobs have increased significantly due to a wide array of reasons, medical advancements that have allowed children to live longer and need access to schools, need for our students to access technology to maintain the rigor of their peers, but in an adaptive version, diverse language and backgrounds of many of our families, and as always, poverty, mental health and lack of family support complicate issues for special ed students as they do for the regular ed. These days, along with the extensive paperwork that's required for our career, it's causing many teachers to leave our field. Each day, the first thing on our agenda is to look who's out and who do we have subs for. We start coverage with those with the most severe behaviors, and then we move up from there. So some students don't get the services that are required. We need time to build relationships that are key to that success. Without the funding, these issues will continue to compound as we see more shortages with complex needs and no resources to address them. With your funding, We can access core curriculum for all kids. We can hire staff that will want to make this career one they can love. We can provide programs that meet all the needs of students, where they can build optimal self-sufficiency. We can train staff adequately, which builds retention in our field, and we can adequately address individual needs of students. That's what we started out to do. Our special ed kids draw so many to this career by compassion and kindness and resilience. We need young teachers to stay and make this their life's work. Thank you, Chairman and committee members, for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you, Ms. Swanson. Mr. Dahlgren. And on deck, Pat Devine. Mr. Dahlgren, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Al Dahlgren. I'm a member of the St. Cloud School Board. For the last 2 years, I've chaired it. This year, I stepped back on that, so I'm not chairing it. I'm going to talk a little bit today about, from a school board member's position, or from a school board member's standpoint, what the special education cross-subsidy does. It's going to be a little bit different from what you've heard up to this point, because people have talked a lot about special education. Special education is an absolute necessity in our schools, and we need, you know, whether we have the right amount or the wrong amount, I'm not going to say. But it's an absolute necessity, and there's no way that we can move away from providing special education services that saves the lives of hundreds of thousands of students. 20% of our district is students in special who get special education services. St. Cloud is a unique district in the middle of Minnesota where over 60% of our students are free and reduced lunch. Over 50% of our students are students of color. Over 25% of our students are English language learners. So we have a lot of very unique to central Minnesota challenges that a lot of the surrounding districts don't see. When it comes to the special education deficit in our district, it's approximately $10 to $12 million, and that right there is about 8% of our total budget. So if you want to look at it a different way, the 8% or the $12 million comes out of regular education funding and gets transferred over to pay for special education services. If you wanted to look at it for every other district in the state, if you were to want to put a burden like that on them, I would say think about it this way. What if you had to go back to your districts after this session and tell them that the best you could do is to negotiate an 8% reduction in the formula? And what kind of panic would result in your district? And what would they have to do to be able to cover that shortfall? We face that every year. Our special ed deficit is that big. So what ends up happening in a district is you go and every year the Department of Education hands out or passes out numbers called the profiles of school districts. And if you look at those profiles, it ranks by fund where your school district ranks compared to other school districts on a per pupil spending. So I take 32 of very similar school, similar size and similar and similar area school districts and rank them. And when it comes to special instructional support services, which would include the EL and things such as that, we are number 2 out of the 32. It's the highest spending. Special education, we're number 2 out of 32. We're higher than Minneapolis on a per student spending basis. And where does that funding, because those are not fully funded expenses, where does that come from? You look at the bottom half of the profiles, and where do we not measure up? Even though we have an extreme number of high needs, which is low income, students of color, EL students, a lot of our EL students have come over here. They may come in seventh grade. They've never gone to a formal education or gotten any formal education in their life. They come over and enter our school system. We have a lot of needs, but our regular instruction dollars is lower than the state average, and it's in the bottom half of spending for the district. So we have to provide the services to high needs kids with less money than other districts are providing. Then you look at district level administration and school level administration. Again, those are people who are able to give support to high needs kids. That's where we pull the money from, and we're well below average and well down into the bottom half. Career in tech education. Career in tech education, we're number 21 of 32. We're down near the bottom, and if there's anything St. Cloud needs, it's a strong career in tech education area. I mean, we just have a lot of need in that area for it, and there isn't any other districts around that have real strong career in tech. And on student activities and athletics, we're down number 28 of 32. And it's just sad to me because 28 of 32, and the numbers are shocking. We're at $236 per student. Minneapolis, by the way, is at $111 per student on student activities and athletics. And then you have other districts that are right near us that are spending over $600 on student per student on activities and athletics. That's what makes school exciting. That's what makes a school district vibrant and exciting, and it brings the community in and gets a lot of support. We can't provide that. So I will cut it very short, but I just want you to understand, it's not about special education cross subsidy. It's not about special education. It's not about providing those services. We fully fund special education, and we do it by stealing the dollars from regular education and shifting it over. It's our regular education that is extremely underfunded, and that's what these bills, if we can fully fund special ed, we can fully fund regular ed, and we can provide a much better education for all students, and that's what we want to do.
Thank you very Mr. Dahlgren.
Much, Mr. Chair.
Superintendent Devine.
Thank you.
Superintendent, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Thank you. My name is Pat Devine. I'm superintendent of Waconia Public Schools. Appreciate you taking some time to listen to our story today. But ours is much like many across the state. And I just want to start out with and kind of finish off with the St. Cloud contingency was saying is this is not a special education problem. I feel we do a really good job in the state of educating our special needs students. And I feel I'm very prideful of what we've done in Waconia for that, and we've really done some nice jobs of bringing programs back to the school district. So I feel like we do a nice job with the special education. We have a big compassion for that. But the funding has not kept up. And the funding is actually going backwards. And the new formula for us, which is a growing community, it's even less. And I just want to make sure that we understand that when doing that, we do fill the gap with the cross-subsidy amount. That cross-subsidy amount comes out of our per-pupil dollars, general ed dollars that we get from the state, from you. So, for example, I'm just going to use raw numbers because I'm a math teacher when I was earlier in my career. And if we had $7,000, that's about what we get per student, we have to deduct from there right away to pay for special ed. Not all school districts have to, because not all school districts have maybe as many special education students or as robust. So it's there's inequities even in that system. So, for example, if this half of the classroom said, you have to now take $1,500 away from your general ed fund and fund the rest of your programs with that, and over here they only have to take $300 to $400 away, they're going to have more money to work with their school district. That's what's happening across the state right now. So this special ed funding problem is causing some real big inequities, and we've been hit really hard with that. If you ever want to look at our story, you can go to our website. It's at www.isd110.org, and we tell our story in there. And we want our community to tell a story, but there's charts in there, and it's really similar to the charts that you're showing in your bill. But our funding for SPED went up, the funding from the state did not come. Our expenses went up, but the funding didn't. The gap got much larger. Our cross-subsidy cost per student 5 years ago was $687. It's went up by about $150 every year. We're at $1,210 now. It's a 76% increase on cross-subsidy. That's not sustainable. We cannot continue at that pattern and have enough money for our general educational programs. We were going out for an operating levy at the same time as the new formula was coming through, and we found out that we chose to spend down our fund balance to protect our taxpayers. We wouldn't go out to ask for operating money until we needed. We passed our operating levy. Love that our community supported that. Afterwards, our audit comes through and we find out that the new special education formula has taken much more money than we expected, that 76% increase. So now we are in statutory operating debt, and we had to do budget cuts this last month to make sure that we balance our budget. That's because of what's happening to the funding of special education. Again, it's a funding problem, not a problem of special education. There's a lot of programs out there. You might hear of things like MTSS. That's multiple tiers of student support. It's a way of making sure you don't have as many students go to special ed. Many school districts like ours are doing that. We do a really nice job of taking care of the ones that we need and making sure we give strategies so that those that don't need to be in special ed don't end up in special ed. So there's a fundamental problem when you have those that are taking care of the most needy students get less money for all their students, and that's what's happening with the cross-subsidy issues that we have in the state.
Thank you, Superintendent Devine. Ms. Yeah. Posh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Lori Posh, and I am Executive Director of Learning and Teaching for the St. Cloud Area School District. Like Jerry, I have over 30 years of education experience in education in our state. I've been a classroom teacher. I've worked in gifted and talented programming, in equity programming, alternative education, and now as a district leader in learning and teaching. I want to thank you for the opportunity to tell St. Cloud's story and to represent our district and AMSD in our support of this bill. I'm proud of our district, of our students, our staff, our families, and our partners. I could share stories all day long of the successes we see from our students. Jerry shared with you some of the successes in our special ed team and the successes and the things that we could do with additional funding. Al shared with you the budgetary impact that the special education cross-subsidy has on our district. But it's more than just dollars and cents. It really is about fulfilling our mission and our obligation as a state and a district to prepare all of our students to be successful. What could we do with additional funding? It would allow us to better meet the social, emotional, and academic needs of all of our students. We have been frugal with our spending. We, too, sit at the budget table and have to make hard decisions about what we fund and what we don't fund, which students we serve, and which students we don't serve appropriately. Every week, I receive calls and emails from other districts inquiring, what is St. Cloud doing about? We are seen as a leader in education. We are seen as leaders in best practices. And we're looked to because people know that we do our homework and we do more with less. But there's so much more that we could be doing for our students. With the additional funding or the appropriate funding of special education, we could be expanding our co-teaching efforts into math and other contents to ensure that all students, as Jerry mentioned, have access to grade level standards with the support they need. We could enhance our career and technical education offerings and resources, which, as Al shared, our business community is at our heels asking for. We could expand our talent development and accelerated services programming, which right now is showing promising results in closing our achievement gaps and allowing our advanced learners to thrive. We could provide creative extended learning time programs after school, weekends, and summer for our students who need the consistency, need catch-up time, accelerated learning, or those first experiences ever in an education system. We could increase professional development opportunities. Our supports for another unfunded mandate for our students who show characteristics of dyslexia. Additional support for social-emotional needs through additional social workers, psychologists, counselors. And as Al shared with you, our large English learner population, we could provide appropriate staffing and resources for these learners. Our district, as Al shared with you the numbers, has of the
20 largest districts in this state has the highest special education rate. We have the second highest poverty rate, and we have the second highest EL rate. We are a district with needs that is being underfunded. We could ensure equal access and opportunities for all of those students to participate in extracurricular activities. So as you move this bill forward, we ask you to support this bill so that we can continue to do good and even better things for all of our students. I started by saying I was proud of our district, but our students deserve more. They deserve full and equitable funding for their education. So thank you for joining us in supporting this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Bosch. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 1162? Seeing none. Representative Kreisha, did you have a question for one of the testifiers?
Mr. Sure. Chair, just very Superintendent Devine can come back to the testifier stand. And while you're coming up, here's my question. Mr. Chair, members, and to the testifier, the number we'll see will be a finite number no matter. I mean, it's just the way it works. Doesn't matter who's sitting where. But my – and here's what I'd like you to comment on. A number will pass this year. I suspect we'll make some movement towards the cross-subsidy as well as the general fund. But the forecast isn't as favorable in 2 years. And a number of mandates will follow this funding, and those mandates will still be in place. What does that do to you, the overall effect of a lesser number possibility in 2 years, but all of these mandates still in place?
Superintendent Devine.
Thank you. I'm glad you asked that question because we've looked back at what this new formula and the cross subsidy is doing to our budget. And we're very thankful that the last 4 years we've been getting 2% on the general fund, general education funding. But that 8%, when you take in the cross subsidy for us, equates to a negative 1% funding. We actually have less money next year than we would 4 years ago because our special education cross subsidy. So it's exactly what you say. As the mandates, and probably more, it's more that the special ed needs are becoming higher. There's medical needs, and there's students that have more costly needs. That's making our special ed costs rise. Like I said, on the I would call it the learning disability students. We're really trying to catch those earlier. I know we're just putting in a new dyslexia program, the Wilson program. We're hoping to catch those earlier so that some students do not get to the special education funding needs that are there now. But there is some really medical fragile and other high emotional needs students that are costing more. So our special education cost goes up, and if the funding's not keeping up, you're right. That's why I call it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable. We're going to be cutting every year in our school district until something changes, or we keep going back asking our voters to increase their operating levy, and then we're the tax collector, if you will.
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, and I know you're trying to stay on time, so very, very quickly, and I want to emphasize this point as well, and in fact give you a little bit of a lifeline here. You need to not just talk about the special ed mandates, but the general fund mandates that are also hitting you. Because what's happening to schools is you're dipping into the general fund, not for the cross subsidy, but also all these other mandates that are being put on you. And you had a nice little chart and a graph.
Yeah.
You should add to that the amount of mandates that are added every year, because that is absolutely putting you in an untenable position, and we all bear responsibility for that. And I'll be honest, we don't hear enough about it from those in the trenches.
Well, I appreciate you, Superintendent Devine, because you're absolutely correct. With the mandates cause our budget to be unmanageable, if you will. So I'd rather not see the mandates coming our way. We feel like we do a pretty good job of putting a great educational system together, and we'd like to continue that without the mandates.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Strom, you wanted to review the runs for House File 1162 that were in members' packets?
Mr. Chair, members, there's a much simpler printout for Representative Wolgamott's bill, House File 1162, in your packet. And the first column listed there is the pupils, the unweighted pupil count, all pupils in the district. If you turn to page 6 and use St. Cloud as an example, you can see that our estimated guess under current law of special ed aid that the district will receive in fiscal year 21 is $21.5 million. Assuming that's the amount of aid and assuming their costs grow as we're estimating their cost subsidy that year, the unfunded portion of their special ed costs would be the $14.8 million. Representative Wolgamott's bill phases in an increased percentage of the cross-subsidy that's funded. In its second year of phase-in in fiscal year 21, that's 6.6% of that amount. So you can see that the bill would give them an additional $979,000 of aid. And then the last three columns just show those amounts on a per-pupil basis, that the district's special ed revenue per pupil is $2,122, the estimated amount, the estimated cross-subsidy is $1,463, and that the estimated new revenue would be $97 per pupil.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Wolgamott, any closing comment?
Mr. Chair, committee members, it's time that we put our money where our mandates are and make sure that every child in St. Cloud and that every child in each of your districts and every child in the state of Minnesota gets the world-class education they deserve. Thank you for your consideration of House File 1162. I urge your support.
Thank you very much, Representative Wolgamott. With that, Representative Edelson renews her motion that House File 1162 be laid over for possible inclusion in a division report. Thank you very much. Representative Loeffler, welcome to the committee. And members, we do wish to keep steaming along. We got Representative Carlson, Representative Loeffler, you may not know, the Rules Committee squatted on us in the hearing room for a while, and so we got a late start, but we do want to keep clipping along. So the chair would like to move that House File 1879 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future division report. And with that, Representative Loeffler, welcome to the committee. Please proceed with your...
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Delighted to be here and to present House File 1879. This bill seeks to equalize costs to school districts for students who receive special education services in other districts, in charter schools, intermediates, and cooperatives. So while the last bill was dealing about the challenges within a school district and the students they serve, this is the challenges that face districts who are billed back for other schools. Special education tuition billing costs have grown significantly and now exceed over $200 million annually, transferring back and forth in bills between various educational institutions. In my own district, the tuition billing from charter schools has doubled just in the last 4 years and now totals $14.9 million, bringing our school district's total tuition billing costs to more than $24 million a year. These are costs and decisions over which our districts have no control. They simply get and pay the bill. House File 1879 would lower the percentage of costs that resident districts are billed back and create a new state fund to make up the difference. It phases in the implementation over a four-year period starting in fiscal year 2021. It does not deny anyone services. It simply shifts a portion of the cost to the state. Resident districts would, in the end, shoulder roughly the same amount of cost when they serve the student in district versus tuition billing. And I think this is part of the beauty of it. It takes away the incentives or disincentives to recruit or disincent a particular student with a particular need from, and instead really makes choice available to all, because the choice of the parent of what is the best educational program will be based on the needs of that child and not influenced by financial relationships between different educational institutions. And I would like to now turn over testimony to Erin Clockfeller. She is an active parent of a special ed student and a member of our district special ed parent advisory council.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Ms. Clockfelter, if you would like to come forward, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Dabney, Congresswoman Loeffler, committee members. My name is Erin Clockfelter. I live in 68 in Northeast Minneapolis. I'm here as a parent member of the Minneapolis Public Schools Legislative Action Committee, and I'm speaking in favor of House File 1879. I have four boys who attend Minneapolis Public Schools. Three of them are autistic and receive special education services. Our school is a community school with global majority population, high EL students, high free and reduced lunch, high special education. Over the past 3 years, we've seen massive budget cuts. 2 years ago, we lost 20 staff members from our building alone. Our district has worked very hard to balance our district budget and keep school budgets stable. But this comes at the price of fewer classrooms and higher class sizes, fewer specialists, and less classroom support for every student in the building. My kids may be getting special education services, but they are students first. When we have to combine classrooms, that affects them. When we have to cut the math interventionist, it affects them. When we only have a part-time nurse, it affects them. These are the decisions our building administrators have to make when our budgets are cut due to underfunding of special education and unreimbursed tuition billing. The current system of tuition billbacks to resident districts is detrimental to school districts. Our district had $24 million in unreimbursed tuition billing last year. Education funding and special education funding in particular have not kept up with the reality of hyper-choice in the state of Minnesota. Special education continues to be underfunded by both the federal and state governments. Meanwhile, school districts are under mandates to provide more and more services. We have been in our school district for 8 years, and we have had a mostly positive experience. But I know that this is not a case for everyone. I know there may come a time when I'm out of options in my district, and I need somewhere else that meets the needs of my boys in a different way. I know families who are deeply committed to public education who have had to make a move, no matter how hard they tried to make it work in their school district. Special needs charters have their place, and I'm glad that they are there should we ever need them. However, under the current funding formula, it would be very difficult to make this move for me, knowing how much of a financial blow it is to resident districts who are already underfunded. Please consider voting for House File 1879. School districts across the state will benefit from this bill, from Buffalo Lake Hector to Onamia to Osseo and beyond. This issue isn't going to solve itself, and more districts will be negatively affected if we don't find a solution soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Klotfelter. Superintendent Inowski.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, members of the committee. Steve Inowski, Superintendent Richfield Public Schools, first-tier suburb, 70% students of color and approximately 60% students living in poverty. I'm actually here to talk about a specific part of this bill and make a different ask than you've heard from actually anybody sitting in this chair yet today, and I want you to help me cut my costs. We are doing things that are highly successful within special education, and there are some very significant barriers into our district in terms of actually cutting our costs. A year ago, I would have told you that we spend $12 million on special education and our cross-subsidy is $6 million, or the unfunded component. Each of the last couple of years, we have actually reduced costs of special ed services. We've created systems of intervention, strong supports for our students. We've done equity work to make sure that we're not inappropriately racially identifying students for special education. We've cut our number of students sent to intermediates from 21 to 13. We are actually winning in terms of serving our kids, keeping our kids, and doing special ed in a more effective way. The reality is, however, we are also the home of some of the most racially disparate charter schools in our 7-square-mile city across the entire state of Minnesota. Right now, we have 4 metro area charter schools. 2 of them are 20% higher in white percentage of students than we are. 1 of them is 50% higher in Latino students than we are. 1 of them is 70% more African-American students than we are. So basically, we are the home of racially disparate charter schools. Our charter schools from special education receive approximately $2.4 million in tuition billing from us, meaning they serve special education students that live in Richfield within their schools. Given that cross-subsidy, that means that $1.2 million of the special education of these racially disparate charters are being covered by the funding of Richfield Public Schools. Saying that in a different way, $1.2 million is coming from Richfield Public Schools, a widely diverse district representing the diversity of Richfield, and being sent to charter schools unreimbursed. Now, I don't harbor resentment to the charter schools. This bill actually asks for more funding for them. However, the reality of the situation is I can reduce my costs, we can reduce our costs, we can put systems to support our students in special ed, but what we can't do is create systems to support students in other schools. And so students go to other schools, they're served however they're served. We have no say, we have no voice, but what we do have is a bill. $2.4 million, of which $1.2 is cross-subsidy, and the only way I can see for us to reduce that cross-subsidy is to reduce the tuition billing component of it, which for us is $1.2 million coming from the diverse students of Richfield Public Schools as they go and send that money to racially disparate charter schools. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Superintendent. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify either for or against House File 1879? Guess not. Questions from the committee? Guess not. Representative Loeffler, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think they heard your admonishment about time. I just want to say thank you so much for considering this. I think if we were able to implement this approach, it would actually increase freedom of choice and reduce some of the tensions between educational institutions that should be partners rather than bill writers and check writers and relating to each other more on administrative issues than on educational quality and improvements in all systems.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. And with that, the chair renews his motion that House File 1879 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future division report. Thank you very much. Representative Carlson. Welcome to the committee that you're kind of on.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll go over the bill, but it's always nice to come back to this committee, although I'm ex-official on it.
Yes, you are.
But I was first on the education committees in 1975, not my first term, but on again, off again, and chaired one or another education committee for 20-some years. So it's always nice to be back and presenting a bill. This one, like your agenda today, deals with special ed.
Yes, Chair Carlson, before we do that, I'll move that House File 1025 be before the committee and laid over for possible inclusion in a division report. And then you have, is the A1 amendment, I trust, is an author's amendment?
Yes, we'll take it. That was from staff. It's a technical. I think Mr. Strom prepared the technical amendment.
All right.
We'll count it as one of mine.
With that, I would move the A1 amendments as an author's amendment. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Your bill has been amended. Chair Carlson, please proceed, okay. Sir.
Mr. Chairman, just very quickly, and I think there's a couple of people that are going to be testifying, but most education programs have a 90-10 shift. In the case of special education, it's at a little different formula, 87.66 and then 12.34. And what that means is that the payments are held back from 1 year to the next year. And what we would do under this bill is put the payments back in the calendar year via the state reserve. So with that, the superintendent of Waconia is going to testify on this bill as well, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
And as he comes forward, and I guess one other person too. Oh, okay, and I was just telling him in the hallway that 55 years ago I was a student teacher in Waconia, Minnesota.
Well, well, well.
So I have a little history, even though it's a long time ago. And I don't think you were there then.
The superintendent seems to have indicated it's changed since then. Superintendent Devine, welcome back to the committee. Please again state your name for the record and proceed with your
testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Pat Devine, Superintendent of Waconia Public Schools, and to my side left here is School Board Member Kathy Thome. First off, I just appreciate that today you're taking a look at all the cross-subsidy types. I think, Mr. Chair, you mentioned there's kind of a menu of options to look at how to fix some of the problems that are going on. And it is a problem. And we see that across the state. If you start looking at those charts, you're going to see that a lot of people are pulling their general education money toward that. But what happened with what Representative Carlson's doing on this bill that really helps us is we're kind of estimating for almost a year to 2 years of what we're going to get funded for our special education costs. Because you live it for 1 year, you have the bills that you turn in the state, and then they fund it the next year. So it's a two-year lag on when you actually know what your true funding is going to be. So when you have to budget it's pretty volatile, especially when you have somebody like us that raised their cross-subsidy amount by 76% over a four-year period. When it's moving at that pace, you don't get to see it for 2 years, and then you have to react to it. So this is going to help us budget a little more tightly and know exactly where our expenses are going to be in special education.
Very good. Thank you, Superintendent Devine.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that concludes our testimony, unless there's someone else that I'm not aware of.
Thank you for that. Again, this is a public hearing. Is there anyone present who wishes to testify either for or against House File 1025? Questions from the committee? Representative Carlson, closing comments.
One thing I didn't mention that I was, this would mean $37 million across the state of Minnesota. So that's an important point to keep in mind. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude my comments.
Representative Carlson, thank you. With that, the chair renews his motion that House File 1025, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future division report. Members, I want to thank you all for your attention today and your focused questioning. We got a late start, but the school marm in me is proud that we are adjourning on time. We are adjourned. Thank you.